and welcome to another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. I'm John Marks, your host, and today we're interviewing another successful police officer. Our guest today is Detective Frank Wooldridge from the Bakersfield Police Department in sunny Southern California. Welcome, Frank.
Good morning. How are you, John?
Frank, I'm fine. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. I just pulled into a restaurant here, and I was going to make time for you. This just worked out absolutely perfect.
From what I've read already, I think you're doing some great stuff, and I came across your website when I was prepping for one of my other blog posts. And basically, when I come across cops that are doing cool things and are successful in their career and actually have something else going for them besides the job, I've been doing a segment called Successful Cops, and I'd love to include you in that. So, you know, depending on how much time you have today, we can do a little bit longer interview if you want to just tell me about you and what you do with your business. And basically, I'm looking for people that can be role models for other cops so that, you know, they don't really get trapped in the job and they think that there's something else out there. And I think we need role models that, you know, can create a side business and do something besides just police work. The other thing about yours is that you're trying to make us healthier. And I don't know if you read anything on my blog, but, you know, I got out of police work after 23 years, retired at age 45, just because I knew it was taking a toll on me and I didn't like what it was doing. And I still have friends that are in their 60s that are pushing a patrol car right now, and they're there because they feel trapped and they have nothing else they can do. And that scares me. And then the ultimate thing, earlier last year, a friend of mine who was actually out of police work and went into his family business, he was only 38 years old, committed suicide. And I started doing some research on the stats for cop suicide, and I was kind of blown away. Nobody ever told me in my career that I needed to be careful to not kill myself, that more cops actually take their own lives than are killed in the line of duty.
So by a large margin, but we don't talk about those things. As a matter of fact, a lot of police departments, well, I will extract that. I would venture to say that some police departments even go so far as completely ignore the situation because it is such a blemish, and it looks bad not only for the career, but it looks bad for the organization because the organization is supposed to be an environment in which, well, this kind of thing doesn't happen, and our police officers are super persons.
Yeah. I wish that were the case.
That's the furthest thing from the truth.
Yeah. Well, what scares me is, and you know, the whole reason I started this endeavor called Cops Alive is, you know, I think it's the most noble profession on earth, and God bless everybody that's out there on the front line right now. And I just sort of wish that way back when somebody would have talked to me about some of those real dangers that now as I'm getting a little older, I start to see. And, you know, the what I came across in your article, and I meant to go back and capture some of that data. You had some information in one of your articles about the high rate of heart attacks in police officers. I came across the suicide statistics. There are some statistics out there that show, you know, our life expectancy is about 60 years. And that our cancer rates are higher in every form of cancer than the general public. And, you know, I don't remember anybody ever talking to me about that. And I don't think they're doing it now. And I just think that the young cops out there deserve to know what the threats are against them and prepare themselves. I'm not saying that it's, you know, I'm not trying to dissuade anybody from being a cop. But I think that we ought to, as a profession, ought to be a little bit more upfront about what's really killing us. And for those people that, you know, are concerned about that, they either need to take some steps to prepare themselves or, you know, they need to consider another career or do what I did. And that's, you know, get out before it consumes you too much. But I'm 51 years old and I can still see the effects. I've been retired for 6 years and I can see the effects that are still taking place in my life. And I expect they're never going to go away because I've got some habits and behaviors that are going to be cop forever and they're never going to change.
I hear. I understand, and I ditto your thoughts. But I will have to say that there are websites on the Internet that provide service and outlet for persons that they do need to do more research, or they do have to educate themselves on the subject of poor health related to the profession. And it's becoming more documented, and I would say over the last several years there's been more documentation in that regard. I've been at the police department here for 30 years, and I always recall discussions about stress and the impact it has on you mentally and physically.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking only from my experience, there's a lot of talk and no action.
Yeah.
And that's what happens, I think, in too many cases. And for that very reason, 2 years ago, I began research for the course I designed for California Post,
mm-hmm.
which stands for Police Officer Standards, Peace Officer Standards and Training Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training. I designed this course because of the need.
Yeah.
I found that after doing a needs assessment survey, I surveyed 75 law enforcement agencies just in California alone, and nearly every single one of them were interested in a wellness program,
mm-hmm.
But only a small group of them were even involved in any kind of wellness program whatsoever, just a small percentage. And of those organizations that were interested in a wellness program, they had various understandings of really what wellness is, John.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when I designed my course, I wanted students in my training course, which I provide anywhere, an understanding of what wellness is and why a program should begin.
Yeah.
Because there's so many different ideas on what is wellness. Is it how much weight you can bench press, or is it how fast you can run, or how many sit-ups you can run, or is wellness having a walk around the police department competition once a year, or a weight loss program? What is it?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was my job to find out what that was and how that could best serve any law enforcement agency anywhere in the United States. And I did that.
Yeah. You know, I've been on your website. I'm on there now. I see that you're a master instructor for the Cooper Institute.
Master instructor for Post.
Okay.
California Post. I'm recognized by Post as a master instructor and designer of police training programs. That's
okay.
Correct.
Well, I'll let you just do the talking. Can you tell me a little bit more about, why don't we start at the beginning? Why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, how you got into law enforcement, what you've done in your career, and then kind of what led you to create this business on the side. And I'd like to hear a little more about your course.
Sure. Well, after being in business for 30 years, my memory is very, very vivid in spite of the long term that I've been in the business.
Uh-huh.
And I recall coming into the business because I had relatives that were in the business in one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
And I had aspirations of very early of becoming involved in law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
As I continued that pursuit, I became involved in law enforcement at a very, very early age, at 20 years old.
Wow.
And just being around the atmosphere at that age was very mysterious, in so much as I've got to learn more about this. I've got to know more. I want to participate, and all of the aspects of law enforcement, whether they came through the media or whether they came out of curiosity, a lot of those mysteries were being answered and fulfilled by my involvement and enrollment in this discipline, in this profession.
Yeah, it's good to hear you talk about it that way, because I think some people get into it and they think about it as a job, and boy, it can be all consuming, and you need to really kind of think of it as a discipline.
So as I continued at 21 years of age. I was very young, maturity-wise, yet I displayed the character and qualities that probably far exceeded other persons I know that were at that age. But still, when I say immature, I don't mean that in a sense that I was not qualified. I mean that in the sense of when you come into law enforcement, you have no idea, truly, other than what people tell you, or maybe what your perceptions are, or what you want to believe, or what the media projects to you, really what this job is about and how much responsibility you have. At 21 years of age, I doubt very seriously anyone really has a monopoly, if you will, on what they're getting themselves into. So that's what I mean, immaturity.
Yep, no, I remember.
Completed the academy at 21 years of age. I was quickly assigned field training officers, like many in our profession are. Mm-hmm. And back in 1978, the field training program wasn't near to the degree of excellence and proficiency and accountability as it is or should be today.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So given all of those factors, I soon found myself dealing with or settling family disputes, found myself maintaining peace and order and changing the course of people's lives for the good and or perhaps the worse.
Mm-hmm.
From a patrol car in uniform. And I was proud, as I am now, to wear that badge.
Yeah.
Now
you work for Bakersfield PD in California?
Yes.
And you've had your whole career there at the one department?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thanks. No, keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we hadn't even established that yet. So I knew that, but I want to make sure anybody listening knew that, too.
So I think what... In my case, is particular to me, and everyone else is going to have their own story. Everyone's going to have their own account and understanding of what the career of law enforcement should be and is.
Yeah.
But as I proceeded through the years in law enforcement, I soon learned that a lot of what we do, unfortunately, is, at least what I felt personally, is that I allowed other situations within the department, as well as in some cases outside of the department, to dictate my attitude towards the career. And I think that's a real concern. We kind of get into a mode where we just assume that things will take care of themselves. Promotions will come because we work hard,
mm-hmm.
or we'll be appreciated by the community because we do the right thing. And once you get into that mentality, once you get into that attitude, you're kind of delegating your success and your failure based upon what others within the department and outside of the department perceive of us.
Yeah.
And I think that's really dangerous because when you're doing that, you're losing control of yourself. As if we had any control actually of ourselves, we're losing that. We're giving that up. So our success and our failure is being dictated by someone else completely.
Yep.
And that, again, it's dangerous because if those are the wrong types of influences for us, it could certainly get you onto a path of destruction, if that makes any sense to you at all.
Absolutely. In fact, of all the cops that I've talked to, usually when I ask, almost hands down, everybody says they get more stress from inside the department than they do from outside on the streets, no matter what their assignment is. More cops are stressed by the internal politics and the administration and all that stuff. There's more stress there than they get out on the street. And partly because I think we prepare ourselves for everything out on the street. We don't prepare and don't even pay attention to the other stuff, just like you were saying.
We become robotic. In other words, again, the word I use, we delegate. We've given ourselves, our own way of thinking, our own way of having self-control, the ability to interpret things, to make choices in our life. We've delegated that off to others for their acceptance or their disapproval.
Yeah.
And given the wrong situation, it could be very, very self-destructive. Yep. And who allowed that?
Yeah,
we allowed that.
We did, yeah.
We chose that. You cannot blame the public. You cannot blame the administration or your sergeant or whomever.
Yeah.
That was your choice. You chose to come into this career, and you have to assume how you played it out.
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying is we have a choice. This career is still fabulous.
Yep.
You can make it fabulous, but it's your responsibility. And if you don't like it, you can choose something else, or you can choose another way in which you conduct your business.
Yeah. Well, and you're actually doing both, which I still find fascinating. Can you tell me a little bit how you got into your own business?
I had some events that occurred in my life, which really I had to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
And through taking a look at my own life and where I was, I have a great job. I have a great position
mm-hmm.
as a detective in financial crimes with our agency.
Mm-hmm.
I'm well liked, not only by the community, but by the people I work with. But I really felt that I could provide more, not only to myself, not for myself, but for others.
Yeah.
This is what I wanted to do. It was my choice. I saw so much in brother and sister officers having difficulty not only with stress and physical issues and issues with alcohol mm-hmm. and disciplinary issues. And I know a lot of that is attributed to what we spoke about previously.
Yeah.
I knew that there could be something done to at least address that. I began a program that is offered in California called the Master Instructor Development Program. It's offered through POST
mm-hmm.
in California, which stands for the Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a year-long course in which we're instructed on how to become master instructors and designers of law enforcement training programs. But a huge part of this course is also designing a course for POST, which is certified and is provided for training, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I surveyed numerous topics that I felt were important, and I've always been outdoors, athletic, and I just gravitated to that naturally. I personally saw the need for wellness
mm-hmm.
Early on in my career, and so I began to conduct research on what degree wellness programs were being provided to law enforcement currently in Los Angeles, and in that case, the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found in my research was very bleak. That less than a quarter of law enforcement agencies that I surveyed were involved in any type of wellness program to any degree.
Wow.
And the private sector businesses were far ahead of law enforcement in providing wellness programs and incentives to their employees.
Wow.
And I realized at that point in time, we in law enforcement are being allowed, we're being given the responsibility to provide services of protecting and serving, yet we're not on the same wellness platform as the people that we're protecting,
yeah.
just doesn't make sense.
No, that's a little out of balance.
It's truly out of balance. So as a result, I conducted the needs assessment survey, which I spoke about previously. Saw the need for such a training program. There was a desire, is a desire to have such a training program available. And so I began the design and development of designing the law enforcement wellness program. And it's formally called, with POST, Wellness Program Law Enforcement Design.
Mm-hmm.
And since that time, I've created a business called Master Wellness Training, and that's the website that you referred to.
Yep, it's masterwellnesstraining.com, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct, in which I provide those same services to any law enforcement agency within California as well as outside of California. It is a 3-day training course that covers 8 very important tasks, which I identified as important when beginning or breathing a life into any type of wellness program, be it public or private. And if I could, I'd like to talk about briefly each one of those tasks.
Yes, please.
Identify them.
Yeah, I'd like to hear. Give us a little taste. And I just want to confirm, you offer your training both to an agency, but you'll also help the agency design their own program as well, correct? Or is that all kind of one big process?
That is. It's kind of a play upon words. You told me that I would help design the training course for the law enforcement agency. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to clarify. My 3-day training course, what I provide it's very interactive. It's more of a workshop. It's not a lecture series
mm-hmm.
that we in law enforcement are so used to having received over the years. It's a workshop where students that actually partake in the training course are actually working over the 3 days. And what they're doing is I'm facilitating the design. Their design of a law enforcement wellness training program unique and custom made to their own agency.
Hmm.
You see, John, when I began my research on this project, I found that different law enforcement agencies, whether they be Northern California, San Francisco Police Department, Southern California, San Diego Police Department, Central California, Fresno Police Department, they all had different needs. They all had different wants. Some wanted to have programs that were top-heavy with the fitness aspect. Some agencies wanted to be more concerned with dietary, with the type of food intake their employees have. So as a result, I created a program in which participants in the course come to the course and they actually design a wellness course suited to their own agency's needs.
Hmm.
So no one wellness program may look the same.
Very interesting. Well, it's certainly adaptable then to the needs of that group of people.
Absolutely. I mentioned previously there were 8 different tasks that are covered over the 3-day course.
Mm-hmm.
And the first task is discovering initiatives of a wellness program where we basically introduce student participants in what wellness is, what it can be. We discuss mandatory to voluntary wellness programs. And one of the critical things that we discuss, John, during this first task is identifying what I call initiatives, or what
mm-hmm.
we call initiatives of any wellness program. And these are critical. The first one is physical fitness.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is nutrition and weight management. The third is mental health and stress management. The fourth is safety. The fifth is alcohol and chemical abuse dependency. The sixth is medical health screening. And the seventh is tobacco cessation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not to say that every wellness program for every law enforcement agency has to have a wellness program where all of these issues are being addressed. But it wouldn't it be nice if you designed a wellness program that was comprehensive enough that addressed all of these seven initiatives?
Yeah. And so, it's not just a generic program for the public. I mean, I'm assuming this is certainly designed just for law enforcement officers. I mean, you're a cop. You can certainly speak to their needs specifically. So it's not just about health screening for John Q. Public, but it's health screening for law enforcement officers, as an example.
Yeah. That is correct.
Yeah.
And so, again, as you can see, there's something here for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly with my association with the law enforcement profession, I have a certain degree of allegiance to that. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I designed the program for us.
Yeah.
To go on in discussing, if I may, discovering the initiatives of a wellness program,
uh-huh.
We're also taking a look at the cost. What's involved in developing a or designing a wellness program? And again, that can vary based upon the type of wellness program that you want for your agency.
Yeah.
You can institute a program for your agency. It's at a very, very nominal cost.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could make choices to have a program where you hire an outside corporation to administrate your wellness needs. Yeah. And that's perfectly fine, too.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's different.
Go ahead.
No, everybody's different. I mean, I imagine some agencies would spend a lot of money on a fitness center. Other people would, spec it out to somebody else and, work with a local fitness center in the community. Everybody was going to be different.
That's right. That's right. And I discuss all of these options.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this whole program is. I'm going to present the options to you, but you're going to design the program.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you're done with designing the law enforcement wellness program course, you're going to have the prototype of a wellness program that you designed as a student in the course to take back to your agency. The second item, and I'll try to go through these quickly if you wish me to, is the second task is analyzing agency wellness needs. You know, in law enforcement, we, to say the least, we have enough shoved on our plate. And after a while, sometimes that we have to regurgitate it, if you will. Well, when I designed this course, I didn't want employees to have something else tossed on their plate.
Yeah.
I wanted employees instead to have a say-so on what their wellness program looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that reason, on task two, we discussed certain types of surveys and certain methods on how employees are submitted the whole idea of wellness programs and what they could do to have input to institute it in their organization.
Hmm.
The third task is creating a wellness program from the initiatives. A moment ago, I shared with you seven initiatives.
Yep.
Those initiatives were from physical fitness all the way through tobacco cessation.
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular task, number three, creating a wellness program, we are actually taking what we learned in task one and task two and actually, at this point in the training, forming if you will, skeletal structure of your department's wellness program.
Okay.
We'll look at items such as what area of your law enforcement agency you wish to target. We're looking at local events that your wellness program could blend with to give more exposure to your department's wellness program and to get more people involved from your department in the program because mm-hmm. it's commensurate with some other event that's taking place in your community.
Mm. Okay.
We're deciding at this point in our training what type of programs you want to provide. If you wanted to provide a fitness and health screenings for your employees, which I might say during my course, I discussed the confidentiality methods and practices of such screening.
Okay.
Because people in our profession certainly do not want that information being publicized.
Right. And they also don't want it to affect their job negatively.
If you want to have a program event, some special event to recognize a certain period of the year, it's, for example, Breast Cancer Month, for instance.
Right.
Or the type of program you want to provide, or seminars, having someone come in to discuss ways to reduce back injuries or knee injuries, which occur all too often on the job.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth task is something that's often ignored, and that's developing testing methods or evaluation methods. You know, we go to training courses, John, and often they're, at the end of the training course, we have to fill out a paper. Sometimes they call them smile sheets. They ask you, you know, well, why did you come to the training? Were you sent by your supervisor? Was it of your own initiation? Or were you forced to come? And what did you think about the course? Fill out evaluation. We fill that out, and that's it. We have no more contact with the trainers. We get a training folder. It goes up on the shelf in our office or in our locker or some closet at home, and that's the end of that training.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's the case more often than not.
Yep.
Well, with my training course and with the master training program, what we're doing is we're offering an evaluation to follow up with the participants of the course to see if they're instituting the training courses or the wellness training courses with their employees.
No, good idea.
And I instruct different methods on how evaluations could be conducted, either by yourself or I can institute those.
Uh-huh.
The fifth task is building techniques for wellness program adherence. And this is really a great thing for anyone, because what it provides is helping the participants in my course understand what barriers there is to physical activity. Whether they want it or not, people that, let's say, serve on a committee at a police department or at a business in providing wellness programs to their agency each month or every 3 months, however they want to structure that, they're going to become the go-to guys or gals for other employees when they have questions and about fitness and wellness and health and safety. And those persons on the committee, it's important for them to know that there are barriers why people don't engage in physical activity, why people aren't safe on the job, why people do the things that they do that are basically a reflection of bad habits, in lack of a better word. And so we talk about those barriers, and we also learn ways to overcome them so that we can maintain participation with our employees to a wellness program. How do you feel about that? You feel that's a benefit to someone?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it strikes me that you have in your program 3 days to come in and make an impact. And a lot of training programs, you know, can do a great job, but then they go away. And as you said, nothing happens. So it looks like you're putting in some mechanisms there to try to keep things, try to build better habits, change some bad habits, and keep things rolling. And I think that's one of the traits of a very successful program.
It's all about accountability. And the nice thing about this is that in the next section here, task number six, which is called selecting incentives to promote participant involvement, I introduce numerous ways which employees can be provided incentives in order to adhere to the wellness program.
Mm-hmm.
What's very nice about this is that employees, if they could adhere to a wellness program over a period of 3 months, they're at the beginning stages of what is called transformation.
Mm-hmm.
They are transforming from a point of, well, should I get involved with this program? Are other people getting involved with the program? To where, hey, I'm going to go out and buy myself a new pair of tennis shoes and maybe start walking around the block a little bit. Or maybe I'm going to kind of maybe go to the I don't want to mention any particular market.
The gym.
But
let's
say a health food market where they actually provide certain types of whole foods that are beneficial to one's diet. And so maybe they'll start making those preparations. And after a person, after 3 months, after 6 months, they're engaged in this, they really don't need the incentives anymore because now they make it a lifestyle. And that's what wellness is.
Yeah.
If one were to ask me what the definition of wellness is, my interpretation of wellness is simply the promotion of health, safety, and fitness through education and lifestyle transformation. That's what wellness is to me.
Hmm.
And those transformations do take effect. So the incentives that we really needed to jumpstart our employees, you don't need them anymore because they jumpstart themselves.
Hmm.
The second task, John, is developing community support of wellness programs. You know, we're not out there alone. And I think in our profession, we try to carry the weight of the world on our shoulders.
Yep.
But we can't do that because you have spoken to me this morning about what ill effects that has upon us mentally and physically.
Yeah.
We have to know that there's other people out there that will support us in promoting and servicing our wellness program. They act as outstanding resources to providing wellness committees and employees to keeping the strength and momentum of any kind of wellness program.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I agree with you. We all too often kind of isolate ourselves and maybe we're better off embracing all the support we can get if we just ask for it.
Right. And this support can come from community partnerships, local gymnasiums, local county or private mental health centers, alcohol and chemical dependency organizations, weight nutrition professionals, dietitians. These are your resources. We're not experts in all of these areas. I'm not.
Well, we're real good at collecting those resources when we're going to take other people and force them or refer them into it. But when we think about our own lives, we are not very good about doing that.
Right, right. Yeah. One thing we definitely want to be careful of, as I mentioned before, is the privacy issue. Enough can't be said on this. But a wellness program can be executed successfully in such a way that others outside the confidentiality circle, so to speak, are not privy to information that our participants don't want to know about.
Yeah.
Such as issues that concern a employee's mental health an injury maybe to assess an injury to a employee that they wish more confidentiality on.
Right.
And these are issues that any employee participating in a wellness program should feel secure that are being privatized.
Yeah. Great.
The another concern I might have, and I just hit it briefly, is that when an agency uses our community resources, certainly want to be concerned when using outside resources. Many of them are in business, and as such, we certainly don't want to flag our police officers and their health issues or their mental health issues and have them to become continual customers or clients of certain private entities who are actually not looking out for the best interest of our employees.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually looking out for the best interest of supporting their private business.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense to
you? Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. The eighth and final task we have in the wellness program that we instruct is developing students' ability to create a presentation for a wellness program to agency administrators you know, John, no matter how bad your department's or your company's wellness committee wants a wellness program, no matter how bad I, as a designer of this course, want to see wellness programs flourish in America, an organization is not going to proceed with this unless their management is on board.
Yeah.
You've got to get the management on board, and they have to make a commitment. And that commitment can be made in a number of ways. But what I like to do is to discuss how important management is in the training course. And I actually have participants in my training course making a memorandum of proposal stating what a wellness program is to the manager or department head, who's going to participate, who will benefit. And, of course, as you know as well as I do, they want to know what's the return on investment.
Yep.
And I can assure you, at a minimum, the cost of wellness programs, and this is widely known throughout the industry, is at a minimum $3 to $1 return for every dollar spent on a wellness program. So those managers, administrators, they need to know that. And we're going to let them know that through the proposal that students in the course are going to actually execute in my class. Furthermore, we want to in addition to letting them know what's in it for the organization, we want to establish setting goals and establish what the results of those goals are going to be. And you perhaps already know what some of the results of the goals of establishing a wellness program would be, like employee recruitment, reduce absenteeism, reducing turnover. We know those. We've heard those. And if we haven't, well, then I've got news for you. Those are results. But those oftentimes, John, and nobody talks about this, but I'll talk about this, those oftentimes are long-term results, long-term goals. They're great, and they will happen, but they're long-term. And unfortunately, a lot of department heads, they want to see a quick turnaround. Okay, we're going to institute this program today. They want to see results now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a lot of those results don't occur for several months or more down the line.
Yep.
So what are we going to do, John? How are we going to convince department heads, managers, police, the chiefs of police and sheriffs to buy into having wellness training in their law enforcement agencies? We're going to let them know that there is immediate benefits by setting goals, which students in my course will discuss in writing their memorandum of proposal to their management, that setting goals actually precedes the results of the goals. And what are setting goals? Well, immediate goals which can be recognized and identified in having a wellness program are things such as providing knowledge to employees, changing beliefs, maximizing employee output, increasing high-performance team building, improving morale, building personal leadership, promoting life skills, making our employees personally accountable. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Keeps a lot of our colleagues out of internal affairs.
Yep.
And just creating a synergistic environment in the workplace. So we work as a team. I mean, as a fan of sports, we look at one of our favorite baseball teams or football teams, soccer teams. We just witnessed the events, team events in the Olympics.
Yeah.
They won because of a team concept, not because everyone was going in different directions.
Yep.
And this is the kind of environment we want to promote in our workplace. And wellness programs, even though they probably could not be identified as fully responsible for creating that team attitude and team atmosphere, I certainly think there's evidence to show that they are a very important part in promoting that concept.
Hmm. Well, it sounds great. And you've been doing this for quite a while. It certainly sounds like you thought this through and have worked through all the details.
Oh, thank you very much. I feel so strongly about it. not only am I promoting it now outside of California, mm-hmm. but I'm also I've also created another business, which is designing training programs for law enforcement, and that that's began recently because of the need of training programs where persons are actually being held accountable for the training. And I just saw too often where training programs, again, have been instituted, and there's no carry out of the knowledge and skills and attitudes that are provided in that training. Yep. So as a result, I'm now providing corporatetrainingdesigns.com and in hopes of allowing agencies or companies that wish to have training programs designed for any training topic designed, and hopefully that's something that will be beneficial to our colleagues as well.
Good. Well, we already mentioned masterwellnesstraining.com. If people want to get more information from you, can you give me some contact information?
Right. If you visit the website, there is a fax section, so you can drop me a line on my email there, and I'll respond to that.
Excellent.
So I can be either be reached there at www.mastertrainingprogram.com, mm-hmm. Or on my other website, which is www.corporatetrainingdesigns.com.
Excellent.
So again, masterwellnesstraining.com.
Mm-hmm. And corporatetrainingdesigns.com.
And corporatetrainingdesigns.com.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah, masterwellnesstraining.com or corporatetrainingdesigns.com.
Great. Well, I want to say thank you. I got an awful lot of information out of this call, and I appreciate your time. We have been talking to Detective Frank Wooldridge from the Bakersfield, California Police Department, and the founder of masterwellnesstraining.com. And I commend you for what you're doing for the agencies in California, and I commend you for the initiative to take it beyond the borders there and offer it outside, because it's certainly something that I think we need. And as I've already said, I think we just need to even stimulate the conversation about how do we strengthen the profession of law enforcement and how do we strengthen our individuals so that they can make it through the career and survive the rigors of the job. And every one of us is going to face different things, but we need to prepare ourselves. And it's not just about learning self-defense training.
I agree. And I think that's the key, because things will take care of themselves if we would just allow them to and not force them. And I think that this certainly promotes that whole concept, that whole philosophy, because when we're done with this career, at the end of 20, 25, 30 years, we want to be physically active. Yeah. And still have a positive attitude about our life. So as far as I know, we only have one time to do it, and we want to do it right.
I agree with you. And yeah, and we should be celebrating when we're finished, not assuming that's going to be the end of our lives, because there's a whole lot more out there. And as a retired officer, I can certainly attest to that. There's a whole lot beyond the job that we need to celebrate, too.
Well, certainly. That's absolutely correct. Well, I certainly appreciate your time and you've taken to spend with me. And hopefully I can be a benefit to you and others in our profession.
Thanks. Thank you, Frank. You've been listening to another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. You can find us on the web at www.copsalive.com. I'm John Marks, and thanks for listening.